Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You normally don't look at your face?
Well, I push the screen over, so like I'm only seeing your mm-hmm. face and yes. the document, the doc, yes. as we like to say. Yes. Yes, yes, but yes. I like quickly scooted back over and I was like, oh, you just took a nap. Damn. Ha! Face.
Oh, don't do that. You look very handsome as always.
Well, see, that's all I wanted. It was fishing. Mm-hmm. Fishing for a compliment.
I know what you like. I can't satisfy you in some ways.
well. Listen, I know you give it a valiant effort if the opportunity ever arose.
I'll give it the good old
try. While she's crying, being like, why are we doing this? Why does it always come down? We can't even start an episode without sex.
We just had, yeah. I mean, look, this is where we're at in life. Delon, I have a question for you. Have you ever encountered a movie sequel that you thought was better than the original film?
A movie sequel that I thought was better than the original film. We talked about the Bourne Ultimatum, that the Bourne series is on our list here. And that is one of my favorite franchises.
Everybody says that movie, because I've only seen the first one, but I did a little Google to see like what people say, and Bourne Ultimatum is high on the list of incredible. What do you think makes it a good sequel?
Well, and that's the third one. So there's the I think it's just called Jason
Bourne Identity.
Bourne Identity, excuse me. Bourne Identity, yeah. Bourne Supremacy, and then Bourne Ultimatum, which y'all named those really well. Listen, the brand is strong.
They are.
I think it's just like, it's like leftovers, you know, like the season just gets in the meat real good. You know, I think they just
but that
got,
doesn't always happen.
It
though.
Doesn't. It doesn't. I think they just got better at crafting that kind of serial, action movie. You know,
mm-hmm. What's his name? Just running. He's running all the time.
Oh my god, yo! I've watched this movie on the beach, no less, on the sand.
Matt Damon.
Yeah, I watched. I think it's Supremacy where he does that, all the running on the beach. I was like, oh, those days are gone. I'm never an actor. I was never going to be an action star, but like those days at 40 are gone running.
Oh, that's what you thought? No, girl. You could still do it. If someone was offering you seven figures to star in a film, your ass would be in the gym.
Tomorrow.
You'd be hitting the macros. You'd be weighing the chicken. You'd be doing all the things.
Here's a question, unrelated. Do you really have to macros to get all of that? Because you've macroed before.
I've done the macro. I'm trying to do them again. Yeah, you really do. You know what it is? It's just that like you think, oh, I'm going to, you know, quote unquote, eat healthy. But if you are trying to gain muscle, you have to eat so much protein and you can't just eyeball it. You will think, oh, yeah, I've eaten. What, you know, you'll try to track all day and then you realize like, oh, my God, I have not eaten enough protein because you're just eating little things here and there.
Yeah.
You got to like really be intentional about it. And to circle back, if your job depended on it, you could absolutely get it together.
Because that would be in the writer.
You would have a chef. You would have a something.
Right.
You know?
Well, and back to the sequels of it all. Like, have you seen those Alien movies? Like, because people love those movies too. And I
know. And this is also a choice. Aliens plural. Because the first one was Alien.
Oh, was
Aliens
it really?
Aliens plural is the sequel.
Okay.
And that is my shit.
Is it really?
Oh,
God. I'm learning something new about you.
I like those movies.
Really? But you don't, do you like a scary movie?
You know what it is? Yes. Okay. Aliens is scary, and I'm normally not into that kind of movie, but it's also like badass female action hero, Sigourney Weaver. Mm-hmm. She's ain't taking no shit. And it does kind of have like, action. It's actiony.
Yeah.
You know, she, it's an alien, but she's, you know, she's running. Yeah, I know you love running. You know, she's hitting the alien with a crowbar and shit.
She's all sweaty and wet. That alien is disgusting. It is so big and it is so slimy.
That alien is nasty. That one's a really good one. Another one that was topping the list of better sequels than original, Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst.
What was Spider-Man 1?
Nobody knows. And because in my mind, I was like, that's a sequel?
I thought that was the first one. But I guess Tobey Maguire was probably in the first one as well, because they've had several Spider-Mans now.
Yeah. And another movie that I didn't know was a sequel was Silence of the Lambs. Did you know that?
I did not know that either. What was the first film
It's
called?
A sequel to the 1986 movie Manhunter. I had no idea.
I didn't either. It should be called Man Eater, girl. That's what it should be called. Okay, for
not
real.
Not you with a pun.
Listen, am I wrong?
Maybe you should spin the block over here, Delon. You get me all high and bothered throwing a pun in the mix.
Wait, well, let's hop over to the other one that I knew was a sequel, but I think I didn't see the first one. Mm. With a bald-headed Charlize Theron. Mad Max. Have you seen that film?
Mad Max Fury Road. I loved that.
You know why? Who's that British guy in it? Who played?
Oh, I don't know what. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Tom.
Ew, not you say he has a thick neck. And you know what? I don't know what his name is, but him and Charlize, they don't really like each other.
Are you serious?
They were butting heads.
He gives off asshole.
He gives asshole.
He really gives. Like you date him, he's gonna cheat on you, and he'll keep coming back because the dick is good.
Because the dick is amazing. It's amazing. I think you were onto something with the neck. I think the neck is how you know.
Yep. That is, run from the neck, ladies. Run from the neck.
Ooh, wait. No.
Listen. Wait.
I hate you for that. Let me fix it.
Welcome back to Let Me Fix It, the podcast that says, if you want to be somebody, hey, if you want to go somewhere, what? You better wake up and pay your attention. Okay, that was, I don't know, now that sounded together.
In my mind, well, the harmony was on.
the harmony. Well, you know what? We tried. I'm Francesca Ramsey. I'm an actress, a producer, a writer, and graphic designer.
And I'm DeLon Grant. I'm an actor, a singer, a photographer, and a writer. And this week, we're reviewing one of the best movie sequels, if not the best movie sequel of all time. No arguments will be had, so sorry about that. Get in the DMs if you have anything to say. That's right, Sister Act 2, back in the habit. So, class, a few weeks ago, we did an episode on Lauryn Hill, and please go back and listen to that episode, because I think, personally, bias, but it's one of our best. And believe it or not, it took everything in us not to detour that entire episode into a recap love fest of Sister Act 2. So we thought, why not do an entire episode about this iconic movie musical that is a movie and a musical? J-Lo, that's right, I'm talking to yo dumbass.
J-Lo is so pissed.
She hates us. She hates me. And listen, one day I'm gonna meet this woman and she's gonna be like, you motherfucker.
I love that you think that J-Lo's listening to Let Me Fix. She totally is.
I also love that I think that I'm gonna be famous enough to meet her someday.
You might be. Never know. Well, like I also mentioned in our Lauryn Hill episode, when I was in Catholic school is when I was introduced to this movie, and we were obsessed. We felt like this movie was truly for us. We even did a rendition of Oh Happy Day at Mass. And let me tell you, the St. Anne's very white and very conservative congregation were scandalized, but they were also grooving.
On the 2 and the 4, girl. On the 2 and the 4. Okay.
The song is an absolute bop, and we were not the only ones jamming. The film really helped usher in a new era of gospel music as churches nationwide were inspired to incorporate contemporary hip-hop and R&B into their musical programming. The movie is filled with so many unforgettable musical numbers and iconic lines like, "Sister, let me help you out. Are we all here?" Yeah, we here.
Yo, Frank A.
Drop the beat.
Drop the beat.
There's also a star-studded cast, including, of course, Whoopi Goldberg, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Cheryl Lee Ralph, Maggie Smith, and, of course, a then 17-year-old Lauryn Hill. While today, there is no denying that Sister Act 2 had an incredible cultural impact when it first hit theaters 30 years ago. In 1993, goddamn.
Crazy.
It was considered a flop.
That's really nuts to me. That's really nuts. Because it is like iconic. It looms so large in my childhood.
Triple platinum in this household. Okay. It's incredible to me. And again, we talk about this so often. What Hollywood deems successful is not always...
Not what we see, not what the audience sees, you know?
Exactly.
So how did Sister Act 2 go from box office bomb to a certified cult classic? And at a time where there's a never-ending stream of reboots and unnecessary spinoffs, why haven't we got another installment of the Sister Act franchise? This week, we're going to dig into the history of Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. And because this is a film masterpiece that doesn't need fixing, instead, we're going to pitch our dream cast for Sister Act 3. Mm. So let's dive in. This is Sister Act 2. Let me fix it.
Now, for those unfamiliar with the premise of Sister Act 2, because, I don't know, maybe you just emerged from a multi-decade-long coma, or maybe you are an alien who snuck onto this planet in hopes of overthrowing our government.
Not you writing a movie script, okay?
I mean, let's do it. I know, I like really wanted to squeeze in this alien thing, and I was like, I'm going to fucking put this alien joke in here somehow. Well, don't worry, we will bring you up to speed. Sister Act 2 is the sequel to, you guessed it, the 1992 film Sister Act. The movie follows Whoopi Goldberg reprising her role as Dolores Van Cartier, aka Sister Mary Clarence, who after the original Sister Act is now headlining her own musical variety show in Vegas. But her past catches up with her and she's asked to return to the convent to help a group of unruly and unmotivated kids, including, of course, Lauryn Hill.
And spoiler alert, she finds out that all the kids can sing and rap and turns them into a choir. And that's how the movie goes along. Along the way, Sister Mary Clarence learns from the students, obviously, and the students learn from Sister Mary Clarence. That's how stories go. And then they compete in a big choir competition. They win the prize money and thus save the school. Huzzah! Hurrah!
We did it! It all works out in the end.
Quick question for you, Fran. Do you remember Sister Act 1? Sister Act, I should say.
Yeah, I do. I loved that movie.
Yo, in our household, that's why I love Sister Act 2 so much, because we watch Sister Act all the time. Mm-hmm. I could sing all the songs for you. I know all the solos. It's such an iconic film as well.
It's a great movie.
It's a beautiful film, guys. Because some people don't remember it. I was talking about doing this episode on Sister Act 2.
Really?
Gen Z.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, what are you talking about? So just a quick factoid about Sister Act. Sister Act was originally written for Bette Midler, but she turned it down.
Now, that is wild to me, but I could see it.
I mean, Bette Midler would kill it.
She would kill it. And it does feel like something about like all the physical hygiene.
Yes. And like the kind of like yucka 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 comedy.
What is that style of comedy? It's class, you can't see, but we both are talking on the side of our mouth.
Give a little shoulder
and a little shoulder shimmy. And I need a feather boa. And I'm
It's like Betty Davis. It's like it's like parenthetical comedy. It's like when you're commenting on the thing. I just made that up. I'm genius.
Ooh, parenthetical comedy is very, that sounds like a stand-up comedy show or something.
Ooh, steal it.
Yes.
So the other actresses that were in consideration before Whoopi landed the role were Tracy Ullman, could totally see it. Cher.
Yeah, but Tracy Ullman would have done this in such like a, I feel like she would be in like prosthetics.
I was going to say she would have a nose and a beard on, right? she's so funny. I could see her doing it.
Totally.
Cher and Madonna were also considered.
Madonna.
Maybe Cher. Madonna?
Yeah, Cher doesn't feel right to me either. And definitely not Madonna. It's different age group, different vibe, different presence. It just, I don't know, so strange.
Yeah, like who would you have cast in the original?
I mean, I think the Bette Midler thing was great. And I even read that Bette mentioned, like, she kind of was kicking herself for not doing it after seeing how successful it was. But it's also really interesting because Whoopi Goldberg, by her own admission, is not a singer. And well, she had to...
Sorry. Sorry, Whoop. But we call here.
I mean, she said, she took some vocal lessons.
Yes, she did.
Because when they came to her, she was like, I do not sing. I mean, she's great in the movie.
Fantastic.
But yes, her voice is not on par with Bette Midler or Cher. I mean, Madonna, she has a limited... But what would she be doing in this? It just doesn't feel right for her at all.
I do feel like this is a movie that they would have tried to put Barbara Streisand in, but I don't know that Barbara Streisand's not funny like this. She's a very serious actress.
I feel like she really takes herself very seriously. I don't think, it would be a totally different movie.
Totally.
That said, Delon, did you know that Sister Act 2 was inspired by a true story?
I didn't know that. That is crazy and interesting. And when Hollywood actually did that kind of thing. I guess they still do that thing, but
yeah, they still do it. But I think because I have the film so tied to the original, it's a weird leap to know that this was inspired by a true story. But the reality is, the film is loosely based on Crenshaw High School choir instructor Iris Stevenson. In 1991, producer Don Steele, which is an incredible name,
great name.
You have to be in show business with that name.
Or porn.
Which is show business.
Which is show, you're right. You're right. You know, touche.
It's a different kind of show.
They've got a business.
She getting a business instead of doing a business. Okay Dan, Don Steele. Don also worked on 1993's Cool Runnings. She read an LA Times article about upcoming layoffs in LA, and one of the teachers in the story that was profiled was Iris, and she was going off on the LA public school system, largely in defense of the other teachers, because while she had job offers coming in left and right, many of her colleagues were struggling to find work. And Dawn was so impressed by Iris, she thought this woman's story would make for a great movie.
Way to go to bat for other people too, Iris. Mm-hmm. Like, way to, like, you know, all tides, all rising tides, right?
But then when you hear that, you're like, oh, I can see, like, the persona
absolutely
that we know in Sister Act 2, where she's, like, really standing up for the underdog.
Right,
always.
Like a great protagonist. Mm-hmm. So Iris Stevenson grew up in the projects of Buffalo, New York, where she began composing music at just 3 years old. Okay, Mozart, damn. Mm-hmm. She attended Buffalo's prestigious Villa Maria Institute, and at just 15, she was awarded a scholarship to Ohio's Oberlin Conservatory of Music. After graduating, she played music professionally for a few years before starting her teaching career in Los Angeles during the mid-80s. In 1985, Iris was hired as a music teacher at Crenshaw High School in South Central, teaching piano, music theory, and choir. Iris was so good that her classes blew up almost instantly. In the past, classes were sparse with as little as 12 students, but soon over 600 kids were clamoring to get into Iris's choir and band classes. Influential teachers like this are people who should be teaching, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's so, like, it warms my heart, and it also, like, makes me sad because right now they are dismantling arts education schools, and, like, music education is so important. It, like, helps kids in all of their other areas, especially, like, subjects like math, but just teaching kids to have dedication to something and practicing and being able to work on something and see yourself get better is so empowering. Delon, do you have any favorite music teachers that you remember?
Well, I'm remembering three things. I stopped playing the tuba because I didn't want to play the tuba in seventh grade, but that's what that was assigned to me because I was a big kid and I could carry the instrument, right? So that was awful. So I quit band in seventh grade and went to choir because I also liked singing and I love music, obviously. And so Marsha Van Camp, she's now retired, was my choir teacher who I loved, who, like, instilled the kind of passion for music in me. But I would also say, just to a teacher, like my theater teacher from high school, who I've talked about before.
Yeah.
Like, without theater and without music, I didn't want to go to the building. I didn't like school.
Yeah.
Smart kid, very capable kid. But without those teachers being like, hey, you, you should come do this. Hey, you should practice. Mm-hmm. You should apply for this state music competition and all the, like, I needed those teachers, but like, kids need those teachers, you know?
Yeah.
So I shout out to Marsha Van Camp and Liz Larson, who really helped me.
Yeah, they really do. Shout out to Marilyn Cosilla from St. Anne's. Mm. She was my music teacher and got me in choir and had us sing contemporary songs in church and just was doing things to get us excited about the work. And that's exactly what Iris was doing as well. The Crenshaw Choir soon gained a reputation and under Iris's direction, found themselves performing on the Arsenio Hall show.
Go ahead.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Totally. Whoop, 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 whoop. Totally.
And after Whoopi Goldberg visited the school doing research for Sister Act 2, she was so impressed that she invited them to perform during her 1991 HBO comedy special. Now, this is something I love about Whoopi.
Come on.
She really loves to give back.
Yes.
Like, she doesn't just talk the talk, she also walks the walk. So very cool. They also went on to win the Jamaica Jazz Festival 4 years in a row and the Nice Worldwide Music Festival in 1992 and 1993. So yeah, her talents were incredible and more deserving of a movie musical.
Talk about it.
She was such a presence in her students' lives that she got the nickname Mama. Mm. In that 1993 LA Times article about Iris, it includes a number of stories from former students that talk about turning their lives around, like former gang members, people with depression, people who had dealt with drive-by shootings, wow, and been foster youths and teen moms. And all of them talked about, because of her, they were able to get through high school and later have careers in the music industry. In addition to raking up awards and inspiring the largely Black and Brown students at Crenshaw High, Iris was pushing for change within her community. She sang and co-wrote the song The City of Fallen Angels, which was a local radio hit that called for peace and unity in the wake of the LA riots. So again, Iris was giving us the material.
I'm telling you. And like, where's the humanitarian award for people like this? Like, I'm sure she's received community recognition and community awards, but like,
I mean, I'm kind of pissed off that I didn't know about her until I started researching for this episode. Part. I was like, why isn't she like a bigger name?
Absolutely. And so glad that like now we're putting a spotlight on the fact that like this movie was made about her or adjacent, yeah, as we're about to find out. So producer Dawn Steele teamed up with writer Judy Ann Mason to pen a script inspired by Iris Stevenson's story titled Knocking on Heaven's Door. Luckily, they were able to get Disney on board, but there's always a catch. The studio was desperate for a follow-up to Sister Act in time for the Christmas season, and so they needed Knocking on Heaven's Door to just be slightly reworked. Sounds like a win, right? No.
Yeah.
Sure, except Sister Act was Disney's most successful live-action movie, so the stakes were extra high. Not only was this Judy's first movie script, she'd written a bunch of plays and TV episodes, but the studio was also set to release Nightmare Before Christmas and Three Musketeers, so Sister Act 2 really needed to deliver. And it wasn't an easy task. She had to take her drama script about this real person's life and transform it into a musical comedy, starting a fictional character with an already developed backstory. The task is large, yeah, but I'm telling you, Judy Ann Mason, you did a good job for me.
Judy crushed it.
She crushed it.
And like, this is what's so wild about Hollywood, that like the roller coaster that this woman went on, where it's like, okay, I wrote the script, I'm making it. And then it's like, okay, can you just change the entire thing? Make it a totally different thing. Make it a comedy now.
You've been on this end of things where they're like, can you put a dump truck in there? Can you just
literally? They were like, okay, but what if it was a nun? And you're like, no, it's not a nun. It's about this woman in Crenshaw.
Wait, it slightly reminds me of that scene from American Fiction where they're like, mm-hmm, he's on the phone with like publisher, and the publisher's like,
oh, and he's like, let's name the book Fuck.
Yes, it's like so asinine, but clearly so real, right?
Yes, it's so true. So Sister Track 2 has a lot riding on it. Christmas season, sequel to a hit movie, and a first-time feature writer. So Sister Act 2 hits theaters December 10th, 1993, and it struggles. Okay, 1993, DeLon. We were in the third grade. What was third grade DeLon up to?
Ooh, Lord God. He was in the lowest reading group.
Oh no.
it's always the trauma. You don't remember the good stuff. He was in the lowest reading group. We moved a lot. So who got all the trauma on the pod, right? Was third grade Fran up to? I'm trying to think what third grade
I remember third grade Miss Silver decided she was having a baby and it shook the whole class. We were like, "You can't have a baby." She was like, "Yeah, guys, I'm gonna go." We were like, "What?"
Like she's like, "I'm out."
She went on maternity leave. Oh, and it was wow. it was like the biggest deal for us. We got a new teacher and a new substitute teacher. I can't remember her name. She was delightful. And then we were all so sad when she left and Miss Silver came back. That's what I remember about third grade. Just children being children. We felt like she was abandoning us.
Right. Meanwhile, Sister Act is struggling and literally 2 years later, it is my favorite movie.
Right.
In fifth grade, I was obsessed with this fucking film.
Now, this is what's so interesting because similarly, I didn't watch this movie in third grade. Mm-mm. And apparently not many people nobody else is watching this movie. The film grossed upwards of $57 million, which is a lot of money. Yes. Do not get us wrong. But that paled in comparison to Sister Act, the original, which made $230 million. Crazy, so man. Once again, Hollywood is doing that thing that we talk about where they are comparing the success to another thing and not letting it just stand on its own, because $57 million is nothing, you know, to balk at. Right. It is a good amount of money. So while we all know that critical acclaim is not everything, the critics hated Sister Act 2. Meanwhile, the original was a media darling. Sister Act 2 premiered with a 7% score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
And one review from the Washington Post went so far as to say, if there's anything good to be said about Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, it's that the shoddiest of sequels should be the last act for these sorry sisters. Now, you try to throw these puns in there.
You dug for it. I just said this recently. I just feel like sometimes critics are like their whole mission is to be contrarian, right?
Yes.
To find the thing. They're not like trying to say it was good. They're trying to find the thing that was bad about it. God.
Oh, yeah. But here's the thing. Everybody was piling on. Variety said the movie is suffering from a bad case of sequelitis. And Entertainment Weekly called it pretty much a mess. You guys were wrong. The joke's on you.
Absolutely wrong. Because
totally wrong.
I rewatched this film, obviously, for this episode, and I was like tearing up several times.
The movie is a masterpiece.
I mean, just for my youth, right? So why didn't critics like Sister Act 2? It wasn't that the movie wasn't good, as Fran and I keep saying, but it was a major departure from the original, which saw Whoopi Goldberg as the magical Negro, which I totally thought about rewatching this film, because she still plays in that magical Negro in this, but there happened to be young people of color that she's out there.
Right. Yes, exactly. But in the original, it's a bunch of white people and they're all like, "You're doing it wrong." Like,
totally.
Like the racial politics of the original are bad. These white people yelling at her all the time.
Using religion to justify why they're yelling at her. So Whoopi, obviously, we're saying, plays the magical Negro for these white nuns and clergy versus being in the inner city of San Francisco and centering her help around black and brown youth trying to get their lives and voices together, literally and figuratively. The sequel's also very sentimental, probably because it's a dramatic origin story. By contrast, the original film is a slapstick comedy, right? Mm-hmm. And that the music is very heavily infused with hip-hop, gospel, and R&B versus the doo-wop gospel angle of the original film. So it's no wonder that the white critics didn't get it. And I didn't think about this before we started diving into this, but it is racism. It's like when the white people aren't centered into the story, so it's not valuable.
Literally, the movie is so black, so, you know, it has so much rap, so much hip hop, so much R&B in it. And I think you're right. This idea that like the white nuns are almost like a proxy for the critics. They're like, that's my mom. That's my grandma. That's me, you know? And like, they love movies when a black person is helping white people find their purpose, find their voice. I mean, she's literally the magical Negro in this film. One article celebrating the 30th year anniversary of the film described the film's original poor reception perfectly. It said, reviewers seemed to prefer Dolores magically saving a white covenant and cared less about her serving her own community. I mean, it's the truth. In 2019, an interview with Anscape director Bill Duke, who is a very accomplished actor and director. He was on New York Undercover. He directed City of Angels, countless film and TV projects. He pointed out the stark difference in reception by white critics and black audiences by saying the faces of the reviewers were very different than the viewers. So I was surprised, but not shocked, because they didn't get us at the time. They didn't get the message and did not relate on an emotional level.
It's just crazy too, to think that, like, not only are we still dealing with some of these kind of issues around race and who, how our art is kind of talked about or criticized. But yo, this was, despite it being 30 years ago, in my mind, 1993 was not that long ago. That's just, you know, so it's crazy. Like, wow, this is what we're talking about in 1993. And we can still say the same thing in 2024.
Yeah, it's so real. I mean, and the issue is on every level in our industry. You and I talk about this a lot, just in terms of like casting.
Yes.
We need more black casting directors, right? We need more black critics reviewing movies and like digging into the cultural commentary behind these different art forms or different actors.
And the context,
And the context, like, you see this all the time too, like during award season, there's always like some tweet that goes viral where they mistake two different black people on the red carpet. And it's like, why don't y'all have black journalists covering the red carpet? Like, you need a diverse newsroom.
Yes.
And like this idea of like, you know, 2020 happened and it was like DEI, whatever, whatever. But like, it was also performative. Like, it wasn't about like diversifying your company's culture so that you can have the best voices, but also have like well-rounded perspectives. It was just like, oh, we hired one black person. We did it.
You're taking a box, right? Which is like a continuation of like a diversity hire. If you want, like, what they did was they were like, oh no, we'll do it right now for 6 months.
And now we're pulling it. And now here we are in 2024. And they're like, okay, we're firing. We're letting go all those people. Bye.
Totally.
All right. Well, despite the bad reviews when the film first came out, the film found a new audience years later when it went into syndication as a TV movie, and Lauryn Hill became a household name in 1996 as a member of the Fugees, and then, of course, later swept the Grammys with her debut album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, in 1998. Now, Delon, you touched on this. I remember watching this movie as a kid on TV, but I had no idea that I was a part of this cult classic wave 3 years after it had been in theaters. Did you think it was a TV movie? Did you know it was in the theater?
I mean, no, not at that point. I had no idea. I was just like, you know, on cable, you know, like on HBO or whatever.
All the time.
And then I would start renting it from Blockbuster, you know, just because I wanted to see it all the time. But I first knew it as a TV movie. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that is how most people were introduced to this film. A lot of people went and sought it out after Lauryn Hill became famous because they were like, oh my God, I want to see what other stuff that she had done. They fell in love with her in the Fugees, and then they're like, oh, she's also in this movie. So it's so interesting how that happened.
That's super interesting because my introduction to Lauryn Hill happened in reverse. Like, I knew her from Sister Act, and then the Fugees album came out and I was like, oh, that's that chick from, oh wow, she sang well in the movie, but I thought she was an actress. And I was like, oh no, she's a singer first, right?
Yeah.
Who happened to act so well in the movie. And I rewatched this film, like I said earlier, and I was just, I mean, I was shocked at how many times I welled up.
When were you crying?
So I can tell you several points. When the sisters, the nuns, have like a little performance where they sing a temptation song to like show the kids like how to do it and how to perform. Yeah. I welled up when that happened.
Really?
Yes.
Segregation, termination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation, obligation to our nation.
So confusion.
Yeah.
That's what the world is today. Ooh, hey.
let me hear. Ball of confusion.
That's what the world is today.
Hey.
Let me hear. I also like, you know, when she, they're doing Oh Happy Day for the first time and the kids are like, a little like timid. La 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 la. I love when she goes, now let's play. Hands off me. I was like, oh.
La 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 la.
A lot of emotional moments in the movie. And I will say, even though you know a movie is good when you as the audience, you know where it's going. Mm-hmm. You know they're going to save the school. Mm-hmm. You know they are going to win the competition.
Right.
And you are excited when they win. You have a moment of like, are they going
to
do it?
I know. You know that they have to, but you still get goosebumps and excitement. It's the tension mm-hmm. and release of it all, right?
Yes.
And I think the other moment I'll mention is like when she discovers that they can sing and like yes. that's when like there's music in the movie up to that point, but that's when the focus on these kids is, she's like, oh, I'm going to save you with music, right?
Yeah.
And music is the thing that makes a film so special, yeah. which is, you know, again, we talked about these white critics and why hip hop and R&B are, they didn't get it because it's not their music, dare I say. It was just mm-hmm. so, so black. The man behind the film's iconic music, melding rap and gospel and R&B, is composer Mervyn Warren, who is a member of the 10-time Grammy-winning a cappella group Take Six. Now, Fran, I did not remember this song, Biggest Part of Me, but you know this jam?
I did not know this jam. Oh my God. This 1994 song, Biggest Part of Me. And they also, they started as an a cappella group. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their songs are a cappella, but Biggest Part of Me does have instrumentation, but the harmonies are stacked.
When listening to Take Six, you can really hear the influence in Sister Act 2. Most pointedly in the two numbers he arranged, Oh Happy Day, like we mentioned, and the movie's grand finale, Joyful, 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 Joyful Lord. Yo, oof. Hands down are the defining moments in the movie. The songs are marked by their intricate stacked harmonies, like Fran was saying, mm-hmm. and incorporating songs by Naughty by Nature and Janet Jackson, which were so smart to like have.
Down with G.O.D.
Yeah, you know me. Come on, come and join the chorus.
Down with G.O.D.
Come on, it is the jam.
What has he done for you?
And that
lately?
Move, the like arm move.
I mean, and now it's so funny because I'm sure he wasn't the first to do that, but I feel like churches all do that now.
Yes.
Where they're like, they do like the, they're like, you guys loved WAP. Well, now you're going to do the Jesus version.
I said certified free. 7 days a week, wet and gushy, make that pullout game weak.
Not WAP. I'm dead. No, you're totally right. Today it seems like no big deal, but many credit Mervyn for being the first person to combine these genres in Hollywood films. But Mervyn's arrangements really sung, pun intended, because of the incredible vocal talent in the film, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about Lauryn Hill. Huge, yes, but let's not forget Ryan Tobey, the 15-year-old prodigy who plays Amal, who voiced Oh Happy Day, was a major turning point in the film due to that incredible note at the end that he sings.
That note at
Yo,
the end
dumb,
is
dumb.
When everybody like turns around like, yes, holy shit, like I can't believe he did that.
Totally.
Oh my God.
And it's the journey of the character, right? From her being like, you know, it's the same thing she did in the first film with Sister Mary Robert, because I'm obsessed with the films. Like, oh, that little voice. Oh, you got to sing out. It's the same trope that they use. And when he sings it, it's so gratifying for us. In a piece for Landscape about the film, Toby said, they wanted me to take it to church with that solo. They told me take some risks and add some ad libs. And I was doing some cool stuff. But then Murphy was like, yo, you should sing one of those Mariah Carey notes that you do, which makes so much sense.
Also, shout out to Mariah Carey, because she's not the first to do it, but now everybody associates those notes with Mariah Carey. That's how you know you are a fucking icon.
Trend-setting icon. And because it's so difficult to do, you're a trick pony, you know, because you pull it out and people go, oh, she's doing the thing. It should be named after her. Forget Whistletone.
You have to do them in every song.
Right. Because Toby Ryan also went on to be part of the group City High, who are behind the bop. What would you do? Fran, I forgot this song until you put it in the doc.
DeLon, this song, I think, has the wildest chorus of all.
It's so fucking true.
What would you do if your son was at home? Crying all night on the bedroom floor because he's hungry. What would you do if your son was at home? Sleep with a man for a little bit of money and his daddy's gone somewhere smoking rock now. In and out of lockdown.
The longest chorus in the world. But like, it's tell me the story though. You painted it, girl.
Tell me the story. And so memorable, because how is it that we remember every single word? I talk about this all the time. I can't remember the routing number for my bank. I don't know any phone numbers because it's all in my phone. But the lyrics to this bop,
yo,
ingrained in the memory forever.
I'm so impressed with the storytelling, because like usually it's like two lines in a chorus.
No, yeah.
They gave you a whole movie.
Yes, exactly. And usually the lines are very vague and they could apply to anyone, which is so funny, but also like a huge risk for a song. Have a song be this specific. It is about a woman who's has a son who's crying on the bedroom floor. I can't relate. I don't know what I would do. I had an IUD. That's not my story.
But also, it was so popular. I really remember this on like TRL. It was the only hit that City High had.
Oh, they also had It's City High remix here. This the da 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 da. I don't know the rest of the song, but I remember they mentioned their name in the song, and that's all I remember.
Well, what's crazy too is that I did wonder, because this movie was so big and in my loom so large, like I said, what happened to Ryan Toby? Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, yo, there's no way that this man does not have a record deal. Cause he went on to write for Usher and Justin Bieber, but it's that note that everyone remembers him for.
It's that note that put him on the map. And of course, you cannot talk about Sister Act 2 without talking about Lauryn Hill. She gives us this vulnerable and heartfelt performance as this young singer caught between her mother's wishes for her, Cheryl Lee Ralph, and her dream of being a singer. But that voice, my goodness, like she just is so effortless with like all those little flourishes that she does. The opening notes for Joyful, Joyful is so iconic. And now what's wild is I've now heard other people sing that version, like in church or, you know, on American Idol or wherever. And like, they're just doing an impression of her original rendition.
Joyful, joyful, Lord, we adore thee. God of glory, Lord of love. Hearts unfold like flowers.
And then, of course, you know, we talked about this in the Lauryn Hill episode. His eye is on the sparrow. I mean, her voice is just, it's so like smoky.
Yes.
And you don't really hear women with like that range in popular music. Not that it doesn't exist, but like it was very different for that time.
Well, it's also, it's hard for an alto to really be a pop star without like pushing the range at the, like, you know, every pop music, musical theater music, as I'm a part of that world, all pushes it to sing very, very, very high. So to have an alto just singing within her range and imbuing it beautifully and understanding. You know, what's her name? I'm not gonna write me a love song. Sarah Bareilles does that too. Like, she's kind of in a range, a little bit of head voice, you know, but like, it's rare that you don't hear a pop singer who's pushing it, you know, somebody in popular music trying to push the range higher. So it's beautiful. I hear you. Some of the other notable voices in the film include Selena Johnson, who later went on to sing the hook for Kanye West's 2003 All Falls Down. Also a jam, yo.
That is a fucking bop. But also, that just makes me think, like, I'm annoyed for her that, like, her name is not, like, publicly credited. Like, I thought it was a sample, you know?
Really? Because it's Kanye, but...
Because it's Kanye, and even the way that it's used feels like a sample. Like, it feels like a clip. But when it all,
all falls down. This is the real one, baby.
I'm telling you,
And maybe that's what they did, is they just played it over and over again. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't sound like, you know, usually the chorus like changes a little bit and you can hear different versions of it. And it's like, it just sounds like they cut and pasted it right in there. I didn't know it was like a new person. I hope she's out there getting the bag for that one.
But they're thriving too, but the music industry. But by putting gospel, hip hop, and R&B into the mainstream, Sister Act really opened the door for artists like Kanye, Chance the Rapper, Lecrae, Mary Mary, and Kirk Franklin to thrive. Because Mary Mary, Kirk Franklin, pop gospel became like such a thing.
Oh yeah, stomp, stomp.
Thank you. All my people say stomp. So what are some of your favorite moments in the movie?
I really love all of the mother-daughter stuff. I mean, it's heart-wrenching, but the acting, I mean, Lauren is, her heart is broken, you know, and at one point her mom says, you know, there's a lot of good people singing down in the subway and sing sugar, shoulda, coulda, wouldas. You want to end up like them? And I feel like that's so ironic, considering that Cheryl came from Broadway.
Right.
Like, there's kind of like the layers there.
Yeah.
There's also the moment when one of the white guys is rapping and Amal is like, can't you come up with your own thing, or must you continually come behind my people and steal our expressions? First jazz, then rock and roll, now rap.
I love that moment, though.
No lie.
Where's the lie? Where's the lie? Right?
Oh, another one that I really love is, this is a bird course. We just fly right through it.
Cold beans. Hey.
And what are some of your favorite moments?
I really love, there's this moment where they're singing, I got the flow, da 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 da, and it's like, it's like very sexy and very cool. And then Sister Mary Clarence comes out and like sees them all like flowing, and she does this like very nasty square like response. I got the flow, y'all gotta go, so grab your bag so we can go, ho ho, now.
And the way she's dancing, and she's got like her little sunglasses on, like this.
It is such a diss and like such a parental, like adult thing to do, but it's so funny. No one knows this reference, but in Sister Act, the original, and Sister Act 2, they tell Alma, who's like the accompanist for the sisters, to turn her pack on because she like has a hearing aid. It is one of my favorite moments in the first movie. She like stomps on the floor and she's like, Alma, turn your pack on. It's so funny. And I kind of love the take off your robes, like when they're at the competition.
Oh,
your teacher says take off your robes. Take off your robes. Do it quickly. Come on. I don't know. Just take off your robes.
Put on anything you want. If we're going to go out there, we're going to go out there comfortable.
Yes.
It's such a like final moment where you're like, oh my God, what's the tension? What's going to happen?
And also just like, take off your robes and everyone's wearing like solid color, really cool outfits underneath them. Like, come on. No one would be wearing that under their robe.
Right.
It's so funny that like, not funny, but just the fact that this movie didn't land for critics despite there being these beautiful moments.
Yeah.
And like, that's something I think about a lot, is that I want more mother-daughter stories. Like, I feel like we just need more of them. And this is such a beautiful mother-daughter story. Like, again, it's one of those things where as an adult, I can understand why her mom didn't want her to go into music. At the time, I was like, what a mean mom. She's the worst. But like, the reality is trying to make it in the music industry is very, very difficult.
Yes, girl.
And she's not doing it because she doesn't believe in her daughter. She's trying to protect her.
Yes.
You know, and those are the best stories where you can really see both sides of a conflict. And so shout out to Judy. You know, it's your first feature.
Go ahead, Miss Mason.
And she had an insurmountable task, and she absolutely crushed it. So Sister Act 3 has been rumored to be in development since around 2018 with Whoopi Goldberg and Tyler Perry leading the charge. Lord help us. I really need Hollywood to just give a new black producer a chance. I just don't think that Tyler Perry has the range, pun intended, for this film.
You know what? Tyler Perry would make himself one of the sisters, is what he would do.
Oh, Madea would, it would be Madea's Sister Act 3. Mm-hmm. I fully believe he wants to do that. No doubt. When Tyler first pitched the idea during an episode of Watch What Happens Live, he said that he would like to see the film starring Whoopi Goldberg and Tiffany Haddish, which that feels like a very different era for this film.
Very.
And I don't want that.
But that's like a buddy comedy.
Yeah, I can't wrap my mind around like what direction this Sister Act 3 would go in. Supposedly the script is written. In 2020, Disney tweeted out that Sister Act 3 was officially in development. But in 2022, Whoopi seemed frustrated when talking about it with ET. She said, I've been trying to do this for 6 years. I was told no one was interested. It takes a minute for people to realize they should take their foot out of their mouth. During an appearance on The View that same year, Tyler said that they have a great script. And then in 2023, when Cheryl Lee Ralph stopped by The View to promote Abbott Elementary, Whoopi formally invited her to return for Sister Act 3. But there has not been an announcement of the film since then. It has just been, I don't know what's going on with it.
Right.
I want the movie, like the nostalgia factor, but I also don't want it to happen if it's not right.
Here's my question. If Cheryl Lee Ralph is coming back as Rita's mom, then that means Lauren has to come back in some capacity.
Well, and who knows that she's coming back as her mom, right? She could just come back like a little cameo as like a side character or something.
As a cult follower, I would be like, excuse me? No.
I know, but I think it's the type of thing where they do those Easter eggs for us.
Sure.
But also they acknowledge that hopefully the film will attract a new audience who doesn't even know, who's never seen the first two.
This is true. So now that we've gone over Sister Act 2, it's time for us to do what we do here and fix it. But first, let's take a quick break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we're back. So again, Sister Act is a masterpiece, but we've got some thoughts for who we'd like to see in the third installment if it ever comes. Do you mind if I go first, Fran?
Sure, of course.
So, I mean, I just think, first of all, we have to talk about cameos because you cannot, obviously Whoopi Goldberg has to be in the film, but I think you cannot have it without Catherine Najimy, I think you said, how is your last name, who plays Sister Mary Patrick, and Wendy McKenna, who plays Sister Mary Robert, and Maggie Smith, who plays Mother Superior. I think you need that whole pack, right? Is Lauren going to make a cameo? I don't know, but I just want to put that out front. So,
yeah, I mean, we could tell Lauren that it's shooting on a different day in order to get her. Yeah, Lauren, your call time is Wednesday, and then we're really filming on Friday. Actually,
Lauren, we sent you a green screen, and we're just going to AI you into the movie. Don't worry about it. So I want Keke Palmer in everything. So I think Keke Palmer would be a great addition.
Her name has been at the top of the list for this movie for ages.
And stylistically, it's what she does. I think she'd be great. I think Issa Rae would fit her and what she does really, really well. Oh, I would cast her in a second.
Issa's a great comedic actress. She's so funny. I feel like, again, I'm still like haven't wrapped my mind around like what direction this would go in. Like maybe Whoopi's helping another church of some sort. Or I like your pitch about her needing some sort of help, or maybe, you know, here's a wild pitch. Maybe Issa could be one of the bad guys. You know, she could be part of the developers that are getting ready to rip down the church or something like that.
That's
you know what I mean? She's like a girl boss. She's about to open a line of grocery stores or something like, you know what I mean? Like I could see her. I would like to see her do something kind of evil. That'd be fun.
That'd be actually really fun for her. That would be fun for her. I also put on my list a different version of Jada Pinkett Smith because Jada's like looms too large in society.
She can play herself.
Yeah, but like think back to Low Down Dirty Shame, Jada.
Yes,
you do see. You remember that movie? That was like an iconic movie in my household. I haven't seen Gabrielle Union act in a minute, so she's on my list.
Okay.
But high on my list is one of the RuPaul's Drag Race queens.
I think that's actually really fucking funny.
Right?
Because, oh my God, wait. I feel like there's something really interesting in, you know, Whoopi going undercover as a nun. Is there like a going undercover as a drag queen? Is there like a drag show moment? Is there, ooh. I feel like there's something really fun in there.
I think so too. I mean, and listen, drag just makes it spectacular. Drag just makes it big and spectacular.
It also feels like a continuation of the second movie with like the Vegas of it all. Mm-hmm. Like maybe there's some sort of Vegas show that has the drag queens involved in it, and or maybe Dolores is losing her show and like the drag queens are taking over or something.
It's very Hacks, right? Mm-hmm, like they're like no one wants to see Dolores Van Cartier anymore, so like she has a new show that comes along.
She needs to like breathe new life into her career or something like that.
Ooh, so those are some of my like lady pitches. I want to like see these ladies in the film in some way. What about you?
Okay, so I went a different direction with my pitches because I was thinking about the Lauryn Hill of it all, and I was like, who are some rapper, singer, musicians that could be in the new film? And I feel like this is Cardi B's time to shine. I think that Cardi, you know, she had a really small part in Hustlers for like 2 seconds. She was so fun. I love her energy. She just is like so electric on camera. I would love to see her. I mean, again, she doesn't have to be a huge role, but I could see her in a cameo.
Yeah.
And then this is going to be a hard pitch because she is very problematic and she always has drama. But I think Doja Cat would be so great because she can rap and she can sing. And I saw her in Dave, I think it was season 2, and she had an acting role in it and she was really good.
Was she good?
I was very impressed. She was playing herself, but she still did a good job. I also really like Coco Jones. Do you know her? She's in that Bel Air reboot.
Okay.
She is beautiful. Stunning. And she's also an alto, and her voice is so, so good. And she does like a lot of impressions. She's very, very funny.
Amazing.
She's really great. And then like, this is kind of an easy pitch, but I still think would be great. I'd love to see Chloe and Halle in something like
this. They were in Grown-ish, right? Weren't they in Grown-ish?
They were. But I mean, again, just a chance for them to like use their singing talents. Mm-hmm. They can both act. And then my last pitch is, again, in that same singer-actress vein, Janelle Monáe.
Mm-hmm.
I could see her as like a choir director or she's some sort of like a vocal coach.
Ooh.
Maybe she has like a, you know, she has like an aria or something like that. I could see her being like very like uptight. You know, maybe she's like the headmistress of a school or something like that. I don't know. Also, Normani. Now,
Listen, you stay trying to make Normani a thing. You stay trying to make Normani happen.
I like her. And again, she was in a movie that premiered at Sundance that the movie got okay feedback, but everyone said that she was very good in it. And I feel like she would, I just feel like with the right role, she's so beautiful and she just, and I mean, her voice is fine. Like her voice is not, she's not giving you powerhouse vocals, but I feel like with the right instrumentation, I just feel like it could be really interesting. And I was also trying to think about people who look young. Like
I was going to say that your list is a lot of like young looking, young-ish female musicians.
Yeah, exactly. Young people. I mean, and again, that, like maybe that's because I had Sister Act 2 in my mind, but like maybe it takes place at a college or, you know, it's a small town of some sort. Or maybe if it's like the Vegas angle, like maybe one of these stars is like replacing Dolores in show of it all. Another person I put on my list is Jasmine Sullivan.
Now, listen, I will put 4 stars behind Jasmine Sullivan. I mean,
I would love to see her act.
I think her voice and her talents would be so suited to, we talk about how
the gospel of it all,
gospel, hip hop and R&B, like she has like that gospel, but like, it's like neo soul, like new age neo soul. It's not, Indiarie, but it's like the newer version of that, her voice.
Yeah.
So I think that would be so interesting to tie into what the film. Yeah,
and like, and something about, she could be like, you know, a down on her luck singer or somebody who's like trying to make it in the industry or something like that. You know what I like? Give her a storyline that feels like authentic to her acting talents, meaning like she could play a musician, like she doesn't have to do something totally outside of her comfort zone. But I don't know, something about her voice and like her music videos and like her essence makes me think that she would do a great job as an actor.
You know what? I just wrote based on this Jasmine Sullivan thing. Here's my pitch. So Dolores got pushed out. She's retired. Mm-hmm. She's like not down on her luck. And there's this new artist that is very like, before Adele was Adele, Adele was a singer that was kind of shy and she wasn't a performer.
That's Jasmine Sullivan.
She like, she's a beautiful voice, big talent, but Dolores is called in to save the day and make her, you know, whatever. And then hijinks happen. And something, I think like that is a good foundational keel for the film.
I love that. I mean, also, maybe her and Dolores are related. I can see Dolores being her mom.
What if she gave her up at birth?
Maybe she gave her up and she tracks her down.
That's good writing.
You know, or Dolores hears her singing somewhere and like recognizes her voice. They have a strained relationship. Yes. Maybe Jasmine doesn't want to reconcile. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And maybe the movie is them reconciling, but then like, I don't know, recording music together or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the ending has to be them performing in a show together. Like that's the ending of it.
Yeah, exactly. And because Whoopi doesn't sing, she just goes, "You do it." She gives her the mic and she's like, no, mom, I have to do it with you. And she's like, no,
this is
you
your
can
time.
Do it on your own. And she pushes her onto the stage. Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Listen, Hollywood.
Call, please.
Call us. All right, class. Who would you cast for Sister Act 3? Let us know over on Instagram at FixItPod or email us letmefixitpod@gmail.com. And now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, The Glow Up, where we give props to those who've turned themselves around without our help. Dawn, are you okay if I go first?
Absolutely, my dear.
All right, my glow up goes to Celine Dion. Now, Celine is a Grammy winner, you know, powerhouse vocalist. We all know she's incredible, but she has been on a hiatus from music because she's been suffering with health issues. She's been diagnosed with stiff person syndrome, which is a rare and debilitating neurological disorder. But Celine seems to be on the mend. She took a large time off. She ended her tour prematurely. She has a new documentary coming out in June 2024. She also covered Vogue France in April. Scroll down and look at these pictures of Celine in Vogue France because Miss Mama is 56 years old.
Wow.
And she looks amazing.
Banging.
She is so, what I love about Celine is that she doesn't take herself too seriously.
Yes, like she's so
kooky and yes. weird. And these photos really capture that she's got personality, but she's like sexy and she's, you know, loving her own skin and yes. she's giving you like glamour and boldness. And I'm so happy for her that she is doing well. And, you know, her personal business is her personal business. She does not have to tell us about her health journey or struggles. But I always appreciate it when a celebrity is transparent about that stuff. Who knows? It might help somebody yes. who hears about her symptoms and they're like, oh shit, maybe that's what I need to get tested for. So shout out to her. She says that she's going back on tour late 2024.
Mm.
And my hat's off to her. I will not be there because I know I can. I don't think I can.
Francis is telling you you're going to be all by yourself.
No. The house will be packed. I feel like the Celine Dion fans are pretty serious about those tickets.
Oh,
I'm not
yeah.
fighting anybody for tickets.
Oh, yo, I love the music. I'm not buying a Celine con. I'm not doing that.
I'm not going. I'm definitely not going.
Just to your point about these pictures, she has this like asymmetrical bob thing happening in one of these photos, class, and it is giving. It's like Anna Wintour, but like with kindness, you know?
Yes. I just, you know what it makes me, oh God, there's so many funny memes of Celine
yes.
where she's backstage. She's like, she's like, her mouth is so like bird-like. I don't
tiny,
know what it is.
Tiny
little mouth. But, you know, shout out to Celine. Never put anything in those lips.
No.
She said, au naturel. And she looks so good. But here's the other thing that I really appreciate is she looks 56.
She looks
great. But she's not trying to look like she's 25.
Yes, exactly.
She looks like herself. Oh, she looks amazing.
She looks so good.
And again, shout out to her for listening to her body, because unfortunately, a lot of times people are struggling with stuff and they just try to push through and the body says, I can't do it. And so she took the time off.
Yeah, I really do love that you love when celebrities do this, like you were saying. You know, Christina Applegate just came out with her MS mm-hmm. journey and talking about that. I think Selma Blair, I think yes. she has MS as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like talking about it allows more people to feel seen, you know?
Yes.
And to your point, to get checked with if they might have symptoms or go to a doctor. So I think that's so important mm-hmm. too. My glow up. The improv comedy scene has come back in New York City. Now, class, you're probably like, what do I care about improv? I think it's significant because improv comedy is the foundations of stand-up. It's the foundations mm-hmm. of SNL. It's the foundations mm-hmm. of sitcom work, right? Comedy yeah. comes from a lot of the improv background. So during the pandemic, the Upright Citizens Brigade, UCB, as you say, in the city, had to close their major performance space. And they're among other institutions, Second City, which is another big improv school and company, which a lot of SNL people come out of, Saturday Night Live people. Improv Olympics is another company. They were both sold to different entities, as was UCB. And then there were all these allegations in the, you know, post George Floyd of it all about questionable yeah. practices around free labor that they get from these students that go to these improv schools, and also racist behavior. So I don't know if they've cleaned all that up, but UCB has opened a new performance space on 14th Street. And also Second City just opened a new beautiful building in Williamsburg. So, you know, he loves a class. And
are you going to take a class?
I want to take a little improv class, get back to that. Cause, you know,
I love that for
it,
you.
It dusts off the comedy chops. And I'm thinking about it.
Improv is very, very fun. It's so funny, DeLon. This was potentially going to be my glow up.
Are you serious?
Also. Yeah. I have a little running list of ideas, and I saw, cause you know, I took one improv class at UCB, but I have a lot of friends that are UCBers.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was posting about when it closed, you mm-hmm. know, everyone was sharing all of their memories. And so now that it's reopened, I saw a lot of my friends posting about it and being excited about performances coming back. And so I really thought about this maybe being my glow up. We are truly two
feet in the pot. The symbiosis, I'm telling
mm-hmm.
you. So class, you know, we want to hear from you. Were you as obsessed with Sister Act 2 as we were? Also, who are you casting, like Fran asked, in Sister Act 3? We want to know. Or, like usual, maybe you have a suggestion for a TV show, celeb, or brand we should fix in a future episode. Please, you know what to do. Hit us up on Instagram at FixItPod or email us at letmefixitpod@gmail.com.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a rating on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app. I'm Francesca.
And I'm DeLon. And this was
Let Me Fix It.
If you want to be some money.
Oh, that's an improv game. Try yes, to end the show together.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.